This is the Superhuman Channel. Evolution just got kicked up a notch. The following paid program does not necessarily reflect the views or opinions of the staff and management of Tri-Scepter Productions or the Superhuman Channel. Tri-Scepter Productions and the Superhuman Channel are not responsible for any claims, warranties, or guarantees made during this program.
Prepare to experience the strongest radio allowable by law. Secrets will be revealed. Myths dispelled.
From the Studio Gym, where excuses never apply.
It's Superhuman Radio with your host, Carl Lenore.
Hey, welcome back to Superhuman Radio. After this long weekend of 2 days, I'm back in the studio and we're going to hit it out of the ballpark today with a fantastic show. Thank you for tuning in, to those of you tuning in live. Okay, during the first hour, we will be joined by Dr. Hamilton Staple to talk about the history of physical culture and the future of the paleo movement. It's going to be a very titillating interview, I can promise you, because it's right up our alley. All of these topics that we talk about all the time, interesting parallels between these two movements. Then, during the second hour, we'll be joined by Brian Boyce to talk about trends in farm-to-table from a sociological perspective. And that should also be a very, very interesting interview, so you want to stay tuned for that as well. Okay, let's get underway. Dr. Hamilton Staple, how are you?
I'm great. How are you?
Fantastic. So you have spoken now at both PaleoFX, and this will be your second time speaking at the Ancestral Health Symposium. And your talk, I had an opportunity to watch it on YouTube. For those of you who want to see it, it's really, really good. Just search for Hamilton. It's middle initials M, right?
That's correct.
M. Staple. And you'll find his talk from 2012, the Ancestral Health Symposium. But interestingly enough, people think that this whole revival of physical culture that we see today and the paleo movement have nothing to do with each other. But in reality, they harken back to an earlier time in our history, don't they?
I think they're absolutely connected. You know, most people would say that the paleo movement begins in 1985 with Boyd Eaton's classic paper. And that, in some ways, that's really true. That marks the modern revival. But many of these ideas go back, as you say, 100 years, 150 years, to the physical culture movement of the mid-19th century. It begins first in Germany, and then spreads to the rest of Europe, to England, and eventually to the United States. And it's extremely popular in the early 20th century. And what's kind of so remarkable about this is that the physical culture movement, apart from you and your listeners, is almost completely forgotten today.
Yes. Yes. And the reality was, even when it was revived, and I say revived because when you really look at this, it started back in the Greco-Roman days as well. There were those who had a great appreciation for the physical form. They knew that through rigorous exercise, proper nutritional protocols, getting adequate amounts of rest, spending time in the sun, all of these things created a condition in the human being that was outwardly depicted as being muscular and lean and of great health and great robustness. Really, it did start back then, didn't it?
I would completely agree with you. And in fact, the writers and thinkers about the physical culture movement 100 years ago, they were looking specifically back to the ancients for their inspirations. In fact, Eugene Sandow, famous strongman and bodybuilder from the time, he went around European museums and looked at European statues from the Greek and Roman period and measured them and looked at them in order to sculpt his body in exactly the same proportion.
Wow.
So there was this, yeah, it's amazing. There was a sense that in the ancient period, the Greeks especially, they knew something. They knew something about health and well-being and how to flourish and be vital. And there was a real revival, not just in the physical culture area, but in European society in general in the 19th century, of all things kind of ancient and all things, this is kind of the heyday of archaeology and Europeans going out to the Mediterranean, to the Middle East, to Latin America, and uncovering these ruins and being really interested in what happened in the past and looking back to the past for inspiration and guide in the present at that time.
Well, and a lot of people will recognize Eugene Sandow's name as being the physique that they use for the statue at the Olympia. And those who read about Eugene Sandow in that follow physical culture know more about him. One of the things people may not understand about the impact he had, King George, I believe in the early 1920s, named Eugene Sandow over a physician as a health minister in the country of England, because he understood that the health minister position needed to impart knowledge about how to stay healthy. And the physician knew nothing about that, but Eugene Sandow knew everything about that. He was the perfect physical specimen of health. And that really pissed a lot of people off back then who were in the new medicine movement, if you will. I'm sure you're aware of this, right?
You're absolutely correct. This happened in 1911.
Okay.
King George V appointed Sandow as his personal physical trainer, physical culturalist advisor. He wasn't exactly the health minister of the nation, but he was the king's personal
okay.
professor of physical culture. And this is so important, I think, because we have to remember that George V was probably the most powerful man in the world at the time. Right? This is at the height of the British Empire. So it's not just some, you know, English king that's doing this, but it's probably, you could say, the most powerful man in the world is saying, I believe in this, this is important, this is interesting, I want Eugene Sandow around me. It's this stuff about physical culture and moving the body and eating naturally. These are really important things that we need to pay attention to.
Okay, so now, over the years, Dr. Staple, we have seen, and I mean, let's say over hundreds of years, we have seen physical culture ebb and flow. It could be said that both physical culture and the paleo movement have ebbed and flowed, because in true meaning of physical culture, nutritional protocols were described that look and smell very much like what paleo is today, right?
I agree. Again, I think there are lots of similarities to the past. The paleo movement just doesn't appear out of nowhere. There were some writings about, you know, an evolutionary perspective or approach to health in the 1970s and back to the 1960s. We can even trace this back, I think, to Muscle Beach, the beginning of Muscle Beach in the 1930s, which was originally started by the WPA in Santa Monica. The exercise machines, it's kind of a fascinating story that the whole area south of Santa Monica Pier, the exercise facilities that were created there was a Depression era project to both put people to work and also get them physically fit.
Interesting. And now when we go back to that period of time, we know a lot of people who were influenced by people like Bernard McFadden. Jack LaLanne was influenced by this whole physical culture movement. The other guy, Paul Bragg, who became a disciple of the physical culture movement from a nutritional standpoint. And so many, Armand Tanny, these guys used to go, they were huge proponents of raw unpasteurized milk, drinking raw unpasteurized cream, going to the stockyards and buying fresh blood, mixing it with their cream and drinking it. These things were unheard of back then, but these were secrets that they learned when they started to look at the earliest times of physical culture, going back into Greco-Roman times. They found out writings about these foods imparting great health and increasing strength for the individuals who wanted that kind of strength.
Absolutely. And I think what was going on, there was a whole lot of tinkering going on. Tinkering and investigating the past to find out what really worked the best. And for me, part of what's so interesting about this story is that after the 1920s and 1930s, the physical culture movement kind of fades away, and this is really interesting from a historical perspective. I'm a historian, so I'm interested in social movements, where they come from, how they develop, and why do they succeed or why do they fade away. So I'm particularly interested in, well, what happens to the physical culture movement? And I think it's a little bit of a mystery, but there's a couple important things going on there. I think the first is that the physical culture movement gets adopted by fascism in Europe, which in turn, in many ways, discredits it. So Mussolini was a big proponent of physical culture. And what an amazing little sort of side note is Bernard McFadden actually goes to Italy and visits Mussolini.
Wow.
And offers to train Italian soldiers in the United States. And a couple dozen Italian soldiers actually come back to New Jersey, and Bernard McFadden trains them and shows them how they can become more healthy and stronger and lose body fat and be more proficient as soldiers if they follow his practices. So there's really this connection between the physical culture movement and fascism. Now, fascism isn't the only group in society.
Yes, but because
but
they did, yeah, but and because they adopted it, it put kind of a negative spin on things, obviously.
Exactly. And I think another important part of the story is this, Carl, is that in 1928, penicillin was invented, roughly,
right.
somewhere in the late 20s. And this was a really important step for the medical establishment. So up until this time, there have been what are called patent drugs.
Right.
Patent drugs are kind of forerunners to prescription drugs. And some of them worked, and some of them were really just snake oil. And there was a lot of criticism within the physical culture movement about these patent drugs.
Well, especially since many of these patent drugs contained opiates, I apologize. And middle America, who were frowning on alcohol consumption, were turning to patent drugs like Paregoric and Laudanum to dose themselves into the same mind-numbing effects that alcohol was having. So that whole patent medicine industry was really a kind of a legitimate drug abuse chain.
It's an amazing story. In some ways, it parallels today with the advertising that, you know, the patent industry advertises,
right,
particularly to the middle classes and to the lower classes in these new popular magazines, you know, kind of new media of the time. But to finish the story with the penicillin comes along and it really does work. It really does cure bacterial infection. So people all of a sudden say, hey, look, we have a pill for bacterial infections. Well, tomorrow we'll get a pill for perhaps for viruses or cancer or heart disease. So this was, I think, an important moment, an important turning point where the mainstream medical establishment, the American Medical Association, got a real boost. The public was able to say, hey, you know, maybe we don't need to spend all this time exercising, working out, and being outside, and paying attention to our diet. There might be an easier, more convenient way to do this. However, as we know, it hasn't been so easy to discover a pill to solve all of our other health.
Well,
look at where
we are today, and this is what I want to talk about when we come out on the other side of the break. We have another opportunity for physical culture to have an impact on health and longevity in a sick and dying population here, and as we both have acknowledged, physical culture has ebbed and flowed throughout time, but it never really got its feet where it belonged. And what is it going to take for that to happen this time around? We're talking with Dr. Hamilton Staple. We're talking about physical culture and the future of the paleo movement. Stay tuned. We'll be right back with more Superhuman Radio.
Dessert again with the new 100% natural line of high-protein, low-carb Quest protein bars. I love lemon cream pie and strawberry cheesecake, but you can choose from chocolate peanut butter, coconut cashew, or cinnamon roll as well. No matter which one you try, you'll feel like you're eating dessert. But this is no ordinary dessert. With 20 grams of high-quality whey protein isolate, 17 grams of prebiotic fiber, and sweetened with stevia, these bars will make you feel like you're cheating, but you're not. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Quest Protein Bar banner ad to learn more about these clean and delicious protein bars.
Whey Natural USA is the best whey protein in the world. Not only is it from Amish grass-fed cows inside the United States, but it's the only grass-fed whey in the world that is not heat pasteurized. Don't be fooled by other grass-fed whey products that are low heat pasteurized. Only the patented Chill-Rite process leaves all the natural fractions of whey intact to boost your immune system while building more muscle. And Whey Natural USA is also the lowest price for non-heat pasteurized grass-fed whey protein in the world. Don't waste your time on products that only deliver 15 grams of protein per scoop. Choose the best with 25 grams of protein per scoop. Whey Natural USA. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Whey Natural USA banner ad today to see why anything less is wasting your money. You train hard. You push the limits of your body every day, and sometimes pain pushes back. Now silence your pain with Phoenix Kinetic Cream. Kinetic Cream is made using a perfect blend of natural ingredients and reduced reduces inflammation and shuts down pain with its very first use. Listen to what one user said about Phoenix Kinetic Cream.
Training made me ache. My back, my shoulders, even my elbows. I rub Kinetic Cream on my shoulders, and in minutes, I could feel the pain go away, not covered up by that freezing feeling like other creams. The pain was gone.
You can learn more about Kinetic Cream by visiting PhoenixBioPerformance.com. Don't let pain slow you down. Rise above the ashes with Phoenix Kinetic Cream. That's PhoenixBioPerformance.com.
Power Block dumbbells can replace up to 55 pairs of dumbbells in the space of just one pair, and they come in all sizes to meet the needs of all lifters, as small as 2.5 to 20 pounds per hand, all the way up to 175 pounds per hand, and everything in between. Check out the new Power Block barbells that turn your Power Block dumbbells into barbells in seconds, replacing up to 45 barbells. Or try the new kettlebell handle to convert Power Block dumbbells to kettlebells. Call 800-651-1937 or click the banner ad on superhumanradio.com for a free brochure.
New from Rob Riggish, author of The Blueprint and SHR's own Blueprint Power Hour, comes the Blueprint Bulletin. Every month, Rob delivers the absolute latest and greatest information right to your inbox. Everything's on the table, including training, diet, supplementation, gray market products, and more. This is a fantastic way to stay one step ahead of your competition and use these secrets to up your game. Go to theblueprintbulletin.com or click the Blueprint Bulletin banner ad on superhumanradio.com to get your free introductory issue. Go to the blueprintbulletin.com today. Wherever you call your battlefield after each training engagement, you must recover. Introducing the most complete all-natural and organic recovery formula and nutrition's basic training, formulated by a military veteran. Basic training provides the ammunition your body needs to recover and continue the fight. No fake sugar or flavors, no GMOs, less than 1 milligram of sugar and soy per serving, with complete nutrition no other company provides. Arm yourself with the healthiest recovery formula on the market, the body's ammunition and nutrition. Join the nutritional revolution by going to muscleandnutrition.com. That's muscle, AMNUTRITION.com.
Recover!
And nutrition.
Listen strong. It's Superhuman Radio.
Welcome back to Superhuman Radio. We're talking with Dr. Hamilton Staple. We're talking about the history of physical culture and the future of the paleo movement, how they intersect. But more importantly, Dr. Staple, we have an opportunity here. I see it as an opportunity. I rail against what's going on in this country. I try and promote the physical culture lifestyle, heavy resistance training, getting to sleep early, don't be afraid of the sun. So many messages that are counter to what the mainstream is talking about today. And we have an opportunity, I feel like, to really save a population from certain peril. So we see physical culture is now starting to be revived, and we see that it is being carried by the paleo movement. But the problem is that the media portrays the paleo movement as some sort of zealot-like diet, the next caveman diet. Dr. Oz makes fun of it. Everybody makes fun of it. If we're going to have a chance, how can we do this? How can we really get people to pay attention to it this time?
I'm not sure if I have the answer to that, but I think this is really the crucial question. Will the ancestral health movement or the paleo health movement, will it go mainstream? I think it will definitely continue to grow, but I'm not so sure how easy it will be to break through to, when it becomes, if it becomes mainstream for everyone in the United States or even the world. I think education is a key piece here. And another key piece is motivation. So education is never enough. We can use the example of smoking, right? Every pack of cigarettes, there's a warning that says smoking is really bad for your health. Everyone knows smoking is bad for you. Right. Yet many people still smoke. So clearly there's something going on there that's more important than just education. It's motivation. And how we motivate people to change their lifestyle, I think is a very complicated question that has to do with both sociology and psychology. I don't know exactly how we do it, but I don't think that we should believe it's going to automatically happen. That's the problem I see in the community. The paleo community. They really believe in this movement. And I think there are some good reasons to believe in these ideas. But to think that we have all the answers solved or this just is kind of self-evident and everyone's going to get it sooner than later, I think that's problematic.
You know, because that's what I'm, and this is a great point, right? Okay, so the paleo diet works. It helps to reverse certain diseases that have become commonplace in society today. But that doesn't mean people are going to jump on board, because there's and I've talked about this on the show more recently with frequency. There's two phenomena taking place that I see in our population today. The first one is no one actually thinks about what the endpoints of their behavior are. The cigarette smoker doesn't think, okay, he doesn't say to himself, I'm smoking a cigarette, I'm going to die from something related to this cigarette. They don't think about that, number one. Number two, because of our ability to rationalize, we always think that, oh, yeah, that happens to other people, but something magical about me, it's not going to happen to me. I'm not going to die of the stroke. I'm not going to die of the heart attack. My unchecked diabetes is not going to kill me. It kills other people. And these two phenomena cause the population to ignore everything and walk off the cliff like lemmings. So you're right. They're not going to go, wow, this thing works. I'm going to change everything I do and jump on there because it works. They just ignore it, don't they?
Oftentimes that seems like the case. And when I look at and I speak to people who have started down this ancestral health road, it seems to me that there are two kinds of individuals. The first kind of individual is the person who's sick and for whom conventional medicine has failed. So they're looking for some kind of alternative.
Mm-hmm.
And the second kind of individual are those who are seeking performance, athletic performance, mental performance, etc. And I think the key commonality here between these two groups is a very high level of what I would call intrinsic motivation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, paleo is not impossible to follow, but it takes some effort. It
yes.
takes some education. It takes some investment of time and energy and perhaps some resources. So a sustained level of motivation is needed. And I see it mostly coming from inside of people, this intrinsic motivation, as opposed to extrinsic motivation.
Well, interesting, because one of the things that I say on the show all the time now is that the new evolutionary selection pressure is where you get your information from. And this is going to sound crude, callous, or ignorant, depending on which side of the fence you're on. But I almost feel like, look, you know what? I remember there was a T-shirt in the 80s that said, life isn't for everyone. And it was a joke. But obviously, there are a lot of people out there who are continuing on their obesogenic trail, developing diabetes, losing limbs, just, you know, falling apart and dying. And it's happening younger and younger and younger. And what's going to happen is entire genetic lines are going to be erased from the gene pool 100 years from now, 200 years from now, because children are going to be infertile. They're going to die before they can have children. Their lineage is going to stop right there. This may actually be the new selection pressure. What would you say to a statement like that? Am I ignorant?
Well, I would say, personally, that, you know, of course, that the primary goal of the paleo community should be to try to help those people. The ancestral health movement should be to try to reach out to those people and find a way to change those behaviors. I don't know exactly what that looks like. I'm not a psychologist. I'm not a sociologist. I'm not a health worker. I want to start a conversation about where we are today and where this movement might be going, so we can come up with strategies and together come up with strategies to disseminate this information, to create dialogue, to try to bring it into the mainstream medical practice, so they take it seriously, so some of these ideas are evaluated, and we can move forward. I think what you're saying is interesting and important, and my purpose of my work in general and also my specific talk in Atlanta at AHS 13 is to try to start this dialogue within the community about where we're headed and not simply take it for granted, or not to say, well, to throw up our hands and say, well, there's nothing that we can do. I hope that there's something that we can do.
Can the ancestral health movement have any real impact without getting the organizations that drive nutrition in this country, the big companies, Syngenta, Monsanto? Can we really get that message out there and have impact on the population without inducting them and showing them that it's profitable to feed people foods that actually helps them live longer?
I think this is a really important question. So I think there are a couple, there's kind of the supply side and the demand side here, there's academia. All of these different constituencies need to be thought about and approached. So if there are a bunch of people out there who are demanding these kinds of products or foods, then there are going to be suppliers who supply them. And I think that's an important piece. So, you know, we can, the movement can grow and demand for these foods, grass-fed beef, raw milk, more fruits and vegetables at reasonable prices, all these things are important, and we can sort of work on the demand side. The other important piece is, I think, the academia and the mainstream medical community. So the Ancestral Health Society is undertaking the effort to try to move some of this information into mainstream universities. So, for example, there are a group of individuals associated with the Ancestral Health Society, including myself, who are starting a new journal, a new peer-reviewed academic journal called the Journal of Evolution and Health. Mm. And this is to collect and publish information on the ancestral health movement. And the conference is once a year. We're now coming into the third conference in Atlanta, the Ancestral Health Symposia, are exactly the same thing, to try to disseminate this information to a broader audience.
Yeah, no, and it is exciting. I am not negged out about it, but I am frustrated because so many people in the mainstream love to make fun of the paleo diet. And by doing that, they diminish any real gravity it has to take the average person who doesn't believe nutrition is playing a role in their diseases, or knows it is but is trapped and doesn't know what to do, to consider this style of eating with any real meaning. And you know, when you have people like the Wizard of Oz doing shows, well, we're gonna feed people like cavemen, and he locked some people up in a cage at a zoo, and it's just ridiculous when they do things like that. That negative impact, how does the movement overcome that sort of stuff?
Again, that's a great question. I would totally agree with you that there's a certain stereotype or preconceptions about what the paleo movement is about, both in the media and also, I think, in the popular imagination. And back in March, I ran an online survey to gather some data on what exactly the paleo movement looks like today. Mm-hmm. So maybe I could start with the stereotypes. And I'm sure you would agree with me here, Carl, that the typical paleo adherent is someone who's male, probably relatively young, might be athletic, maybe single, and is interested in kind of body image, and perhaps there's a piece of vanity there. And when I ran the survey back in February and March, the results from the survey were really quite interesting, and they don't reflect, the participants who responded in the survey really don't reflect that stereotype for the most part. So, for example, the majority of respondents to the survey were women, not men.
Wow. Right?
56% are women. They're also not in their 20s. So these aren't young men doing this. It's the mean age was 38 years old. And that's middle aged, according to the Census Bureau, right? 38 years old
right.
is middle aged. So these are Gen Xers, not millennials, who are, you know, really appear to make up this ancestral health movement. Some of the stereotypes do hold up, right? So 92% of the respondents were white. So it is a predominantly white movement. And we should ask ourselves, well, why is this the case? And what can we do about this?
It's funny you say that because I announced last week, we've done a couple shows. We did a show 2 weeks ago about the Men's Health Initiative. Men die younger than women. What are we doing to address this? And within that discussion, a subset about African-American males is even scarier than males overall in this country. They even die younger than white men. And so I announced on Thursday that a blogger named Con Santori Davison and I will launch a series of interviews focusing on the African-American community and the African-American males. Why are they not getting the message about health, longevity, and disease? And if they are getting it, why aren't they paying attention to it? So we're going to start to explore this, actually, on the show within the next couple of weeks, because I see the same thing that you're speaking about. We're going to take a quick commercial break. And when we come back, we're going to pick it up. We're talking with Dr. Hamilton Staple. about the paleo movement and physical culture. Stay tuned. We'll be right back with more Superhuman Radio.
Thousands of Superhuman Radio listeners already know how well GLC 2000 works at repairing joints and cartilage, and it's the best price on the market, milligram for milligram. Now GLC Direct is offering a special that my listeners can take advantage of. Buy one, get one free of any GLC 2000 product. That's right. Buy one of your favorite GLC 2000 products and get one free. Capsules or raw powder. Just mention Superhuman Radio and buy one, get one free today. Call 866-452-3473 or click the GLC banner ad on superhumanradio.com. Offer limited to one per household.
Power Block dumbbells can replace up to 55 pairs of dumbbells in the space of just one pair, and they come in all sizes to meet the needs of all lifters, as small as 2.5 to 20 pounds per hand, all the way up to 175 pounds per hand, and everything in between. Check out the new Power Block barbells that turn your Power Block dumbbells into barbells in seconds, replacing up to 45 barbells. Or try the new kettlebell handle to convert Power Block dumbbells to kettlebells. Call 800-651-1937 or click the banner ad on superhumanradio.com for a free brochure. Usually something for nothing is worth nothing, but go to superhumanradio.com and click the Life Extension banner ad to get a one-year Life Extension Foundation membership free, plus a $25 product credit. So what does that buy you? Cutting-edge information, knowledgeable health advisors, huge discounts on blood tests and supplements. Want to stay younger and healthier longer? Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Life Extension banner ad and become a Life Extension member now. No cost, no obligation, no kidding.
If you want to outlast, out-muscle and outperform your competition with a high-powered, stimulant-free carbohydrate source that has zero sugars, you want Carbolin. Carbolin is the original high-performance fuel that will allow you to load your muscles with glycogen in minutes instead of hours. As a pre, intra, and post-training supplement, it will give you a hardness and fullness to your muscles like you've never felt before. As an endurance supplement, Carbolin has been proven to increase VO2 max by 2.8%. If you want fast absorption and sustained energy without bloating or cramping, get Carbolin. Go to AAEFX.com today.
Toothpaste is loaded with toxic chemicals. That's why I use Aura MD. Aura MD is a natural dental care product that is made from botanical oils that promotes healthy oral microbiome while destroying dangerous bacteria that lead to oral health problems. It does not contain fluoride, detergents, surfactants, or any other chemicals. Best of all, it leaves your breath smelling so good, people will comment about it. Right now, you can get a buy one, get one free of Aura MD by going to superhumanradio.com and clicking the Aura MD banner ad. I won't ever use anything else but Aura MD, and neither should you.
AnabolicMinds.com is the premier website for credible information on building muscle, burning fat, supplementation, and more. With over 100,000 active registered members and over 2.5 million posts, it's one of the largest communities on the internet to get help and answers to your questions. It's also the place that the official Superhuman Radio Forum is hosted. Visit AnabolicMinds.com today and get into the action. AnabolicMinds.com. Learn. Teach. Lead.
Jumping higher, lifting more. It's Superhuman Radio.
Don't forget, you can get a vitamin D blood test from Life Extension Foundation for $30. That's $17 off the lowest member price, only for the Superhuman Nation. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Life Extension banner ad today. We're talking with Dr. Hamilton Staple. Dr. Staple is with the State University of New York at New Paltz. I am a product of the City University of New York. Unfortunately, downtown Brooklyn is not a hotbed for intellectuals, so we'll just leave it at that. Anyway, and we're talking about the paleo movement and physical culture from a perspective of what was, and perhaps we can even look into what will be. So let's go. So one of the things that I found interesting about your speaking at the Ancestral Health Symposium in 2012 was when you started to point out all of these things that we think we just discovered in the modern movement, like the interest in gut flora back then. You know, we think that the whole microbiome discussion just evolved, but back in the early 1900s, they were talking about that, right?
They absolutely were. Yogurt was popular. I also came across the idea of yogurt enemas. So, you know, applying probiotics to both ends of the digestive tract, which is pretty interesting.
You know, that really gets it where it needs to be, obviously. I mean, a lot of people probably don't want to talk about this, but in a day when doctors are talking about transplants for people, elderly people who undergo antibiotic therapy, let's say for C. diff or something like that. Quite often the flora in their intestines is completely wiped out. And they can actually die because they have such chronic diarrhea that they become so dehydrated. And quite often probiotic pills and these types of preparations don't get where they have to go. So what they'll do is they'll ask a family member to donate some of their feces to transplant it into this person's colon and lower intestines so that the flora in that will start to propagate again. Why not? That's a great idea. Why not a yogurt enema? Why isn't anybody talking about that?
Probably because it had to do with enemas.
Yeah, I know. It's funny. Especially in the United States, we're really weird when it comes to talking about things like that. You know, we can talk about murder any day of the week, bombing countries, no problem. You want to talk about my butt? That's off the limits. Okay. So there you go.
I agree. And 100 years ago with the physical culture movement, there was a big emphasis on what was called excreta, right? So fecal size, fecal consistency, fecal smell. And people really paid a lot of attention to this. And they thought, that proper, what they said, proper poop, was a product of a proper natural diet. And these two things really went together. So there was a whole group of people who were interested in measuring and weighing and smelling and talking about the consistency of feces. It's really interesting.
But it's interesting because that's accurate. You know, we see this in ill people. You know what? They end up with diarrhea, loose bowel movement and stuff like that. And healthy people don't have that. So it is an interesting subject. It's almost like your nails and your hair are indicative of the health of your skin. And the health of your skin is indicative of the inner health of your body. It all ties together. So it makes perfect sense.
Absolutely. I have a great quote here from 1903. Maybe I could read just quickly.
Please.
And the quote's from a book. The book is called ABZ of Our Own Nutrition. So we're going to go A to Z for our nutrition. And the quote is, healthy human excreta are no more offensive than moist clay and have no more odor than a hot biscuit.
Wow. Wow, that's something to strive for. okay. Well, I don't think I can live up to that one at this point in time. I got to change some things maybe. What else did we see back then that we think is, all the rage now and we just discovered it in this whole movement environment?
Sure. Barefoot walking. We were talking about barefoot walking.
I wore my five fingers to the gym this morning. Okay.
Excellent. Another thing was cold exposure. So this idea about exposing your body to cold water, cold temperatures as a kind of tonic for recovery, for longevity. This was completely well known at the time. There was also something called the physical culture exhibition held in Madison Square Garden, which, I've called in the past the first CrossFit game.
Yeah, yeah.
This is in 1905, and they had a series of different events, running and jumping and lifting and carrying and climbing. And these are remarkably similar to the different events in the CrossFit games today. And the purpose of this physical culture exhibition was to, quote, to find the fittest man and woman alive. So this is for both men and women in 1905. And this will lead, I guess, to my final point, is that women were very much a part of this physical culture movement. This wasn't just for men. It absolutely wasn't for men. Women were doing body weight exercises, dumbbell exercises. They were on rings. They were doing calisthenics. They were being trained in school. This was seen as really important for the health of women and for the health of the nation.
And we were just talking about this Friday. Unfortunately, those women in the early to mid 1900s and later on found themselves part of circus sideshows. But early on, even back in the days of the Greeks, the female muscular form was also something to be worshipped. And unfortunately, today, women don't have a chance. of being truly healthy. And when I say truly healthy, in order to be truly healthy, the organism must be resistant. And we're talking about strength when we talk about this. And women are frowned upon when they're strong today. So how the hell, how are they going to get back into it? You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think it's a great point. And there was a real sense 100 years ago that women did need to be strong. They did need to be strong to raise children, to give birth, to carry on the duties of motherhood. Now, 100 years ago, it was framed within discussion of motherhood. So women weren't getting strong for strong's sake. They were getting strong to be mothers. And in some ways, I think this is kind of ironic about the physical culture movement. So in one way, the physical culture movement was quite progressive for women. It was about, you know, getting on the house and doing these exercises and being with other women and becoming stronger. But at the same time, and this is for me where the irony comes in, it was really to reinforce traditional gender roles of motherhood.
But the real problem today, even though, okay, so we don't have the same challenges that we had yesteryear. Women aren't working side by side on the farms any longer. They're not having to toil. So they don't have to be strong. But that doesn't change the fact that by being strong, they have better lives. They are more robust. They're more resistant to disease. They're going to be more engaged in life all the way into their later years. So the problem now is that women who do this sort of stuff are vain, right? Or they're misguided. Their vanity is pointing in the wrong direction. They want to be like men. We were at a party this weekend, and Elisa Profumo, who co-hosts the Friday show with me, was talking to another woman who said she's starting to go through menopause, and Elisa was talking to her about hormone replacement therapy, but also, you know, the rigorous type of exercise, heavy resistance training. And this woman looked at her and said, "You really like being strong, don't you?" And she said, "Yes." But it wasn't like, it wasn't like she was saying it like, "Wow, that's so cool." She was like, "Why do you like being so strong? You're a girl. Why are you so into this?" And the messages that women get today is strength is for men. It's not for you. And it's so wrong. It really is.
Yeah, I definitely see your point. And there's a lot that's been written about this, the topic of women and body image and how so many women, young women, older women have they don't feel good about their bodies. I recently read a statistic, something like 89% of American teenage girls are either on a diet or think they should be on a diet, almost 90%. Something seems not right there.
Right.
I completely agree. And the whole growth of zero size dresses and how this is common on the catwalks and for fashion models, and this becomes the ideal for young women today to attain this zero size, which is just impossible for most women.
I want to take our last commercial break. When we come back, I want to ask you, what have we learned from the movements before that might help us now understand how to sustain both the physical culture movement and the paleo movement within, I guess, we can put it under the umbrella of the ancestral health movement in general. We're talking with Dr. Hamilton Staple. Stay tuned. We'll be right back with more Superhuman Radio.
Summer's almost here. Are you ready to put on your bathing suit and hit the beach? Age Force can help. Try the Age Force Fat Burner Patch for 1 month absolutely free. The Advanced 7 Keto and T2 formula with sustained time release delivery make this the most potent and effective fat loss supplement, period. Try it for 30 days absolutely free and see for yourself. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Age Force banner ad today. What do you have to lose other than body fat? Try the Age Force Fat Burner Patch today. Absolutely free. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the banner ad now. Electronic muscle stimulation is state-of-the-art for pain management and muscle recovery. Now from ABC Medical comes the Pain Pod. Pain Pod is a professional strength EMS unit and provides 12 therapeutic modes and 20 intensity settings. It comes with everything you need. Small, convenient, rechargeable, and portable. But make no mistake, Pain Pod delivers commercial-grade strength for immediate pain relief. The Pain Pod normally sells for $349, but for a limited
limited time, the Superhuman Nation can get the Pain Pod for only $200, including shipping. Pain Pod comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Pain Pod banner ad today to learn more.
Usually something for nothing is worth nothing, but go to superhumanradio.com and click the Life Extension banner ad to get a one-year Life Extension Foundation membership free, plus a $25 product credit. So what does that buy you? Cutting-edge information, knowledgeable health advisors, huge discounts on blood tests and supplements. Want to stay younger and healthier longer? Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Life Extension banner ad and become a Life Extension member now. No cost, no obligation, no kidding.
There are a few products that I believe in the way I believe in CanSee eye drops. I've been using CanSee for 6 months now, and the changes in my vision are nothing short of amazing. My near vision has improved, and I can read small print from 8 inches. My overall vision is clearer, and the glare from oncoming headlights doesn't bother me any longer. Just 1 to 2 drops a day, and the results are visible. You can find CanSee eye drops at wisechoicemedicine.net or call 800-861-4936. That's 800-861-4936. wisechoicemedicine.net. CanSee eye drops, the name says it all.
Power Block dumbbells can replace up to 55 pairs of dumbbells in the space of just one pair, and they come in all sizes to meet the needs of all lifters, as small as 2.5 to 20 pounds per hand, all the way up to 175 pounds per hand, and everything in between. Check out the new Power Block barbells that turn your Power Block dumbbells into barbells in seconds, replacing up to 45 barbells. Or try the new kettlebell handle to convert Power Block dumbbells to kettlebells. Call 800-651-1937 or click the banner ad on superhumanradio.com for a free brochure.
Could Altrian supplements be better than a Myers cocktail? Find out for yourself when you try Altrian C and Altrian ME. Using liposomal encapsulated technology, Altrian C's gel delivers up to 200% more vitamin C than pills or powders. The Altrian ME gel provides a high-performance blend of B vitamins and minerals. Make your own Altrian cocktail 100% risk-free. Call 888-437-6353 or order at feelgoodc.com. That's feelgoodc.com. Use coupon code FREE and ask about a free gift with every order you place. Order today at feelgoodc.com or 888-437-6353. Don't forget to mention coupon code FREE to receive your free gift.
Your radio just got ripped. It's Superhuman Radio.
Welcome back. And the discussion continues a little bit later in the show when we talk about the current trends in farm-to-table from a sociological perspective. Right now we're talking with Dr. Hamilton Staple. And interesting, I'm just looking at your CV, Dr. Staple, and I see that you taught at West Point where Arthur Jones did his experiment that forever changed physical culture with the introduction of the cam-loaded machine. Interesting.
That's right. I taught there for 2 years, although I don't know much about that particular experiment there. But they do have an amazing facility for cadets. It was a great opportunity to spend 2 years there.
Yeah, yeah. So when you look back historically at the various times in our past where this type of a movement, call it whatever it was at the time, seemed to have stuck its head up and had an opportunity to get a foothold in, do you see anything from the past that we can use to navigate to properly plant this in the social landscape for the future?
I think that's a really tricky question, Carl. I believe that we're living in a different historical moment today. So I think it's a real challenge to say things were a certain way in the past and they worked out, you know, like X. You know, and thus we can learn from that, we can learn something from that and apply it to the present or to the future. That's possible, but oftentimes the current context is very different. Any particular time that we're in, anything that happens is really a product of a discrete historical moment. So I guess there's a complicated way of saying I think things are different now, and it might be hard to sort of gain specific lessons or learn specific lessons from the past. I will say this, though. I think that the internet plays an important role here. This is something that's really significantly different than, say, 50 years ago or 100 right. years ago. So clearly, a show like yours, a website, a blog, an online digital book, this information is really available to everyone who's on the internet. Something like 2 billion people today. That's really amazing. That's never happened before. So clearly, in some ways, this time is different. and we have the ability to spread information very, very rapidly, very, very effectively around the world. But there's another piece to that, to this, and this is what we were talking about earlier, and this is the piece of motivation. So it's one thing to make the information available and have people, you know, pay attention to it, but it's another thing for people to change their lifestyle. And that, to me, is really the key point, the key question, the key issue. How do we get, or how do people change their lifestyle, their food choices, their exercise choices, those kind of social interactions they do, for example, face-to-face as opposed to online, how much sleep they get, how much sun exposure. All these things are really important from this ancestral health perspective. So I think there are some things going for the ancestral health movement today, but there's still this fundamental issue of picking it up and sticking with it.
Around 2007, I did an interview with a scientist from the UK who looked at the number of near-death experiences a person had to have before they changed a risky behavior. And it was, and you know, my interest in this was in 1998, I was diagnosed with an irreversible heart disorder. I was over 300 pounds, and it just took that one event. And I changed my entire life as a result of that. But in that research, it was an average of three times that a person was given a second chance. Please, God, don't let me die, and I promise I'll stop smoking. And they didn't stop smoking. And then another event. And it took three events for somebody to finally go, that's it. I am not going to stay on this path, or I'm going to absolutely die. And that was shocking to me, because I would have thought it would have been one event. Because one of the things I talked about in that interview was maybe we could use artificial, what do they call that? You know, where you watch a video, you wear a headset, you feel it, you smell it, you see it, so you feel like it's real.
Kind of virtual reality.
Because I was, the supposition I said was, too bad we couldn't create a virtual reality program for people and make them feel like they're going to die three times and then go, okay, you're cured, now go out and never smoke again. You know, because if it takes three times, man, we're going to lose this battle, because most people are going to keep on doing it, and they're just going to die the second time, and that's it.
Right. I mean, I think what we're getting at here is like we're getting at, you know, what is human nature, right? What is the nature of human nature? Like, why do people act the way they do? Is it biological? Are some folks just wired up a certain way from birth, or does the environment and society sort of dictate your actions? This is a really, really difficult question that people have debated for a long, long, long time. And from my perspective, it seems like there's some of each. So maybe 60% is biological, sort of what we are and who we are and what we do is sort of biologically wired up within us. And maybe 40% is societal, that, you know, where we grow up and our socioeconomic status and all these things help determine the choices that we make. So I don't think it's an either or. I think it's a both and.
Do you speak about this to non-players, to people who are not involved in the movement, but just average people who are not familiar with this sort of stuff? You ever speak to those groups?
Formally speak to them?
Yeah, about the ancestral health movement in general.
I have. I've given some talks at for example, at my college. So this is not directed towards, you know, the paleo community specifically, but to a community audience of college and the Mid-Hudson Valley area. So I've given some a couple talks like that. And I've been on a couple, a couple shows now to talk, like yours, to talk about these issues.
What happens when you talk to non-players, the people who don't have some vested interest in this? They're not even sitting on the fence. They don't even know the fence exists. And you start talking to them about physical culture, the paleo movement, the health benefits, and all this. Do light bulbs go off, or do people just go, wow, that's interesting, let me go get, you know, my taco at Taco Bell and go home and drink my 32-ounce big gulp that I bought at 7-Eleven?
It seems like there are two reactions, and they're two very different reactions. Some people seem to get it immediately. Oh, this makes so much sense, right? I mean, you know, this is why people are allergic to gluten and to peanuts and not to blueberries and beef, right?
Right.
There's kind of a reason for all this. It kind of all clicks and fits together. You know, some of it might sound kind of weird, you know, the caveman stuff, or they may not buy into all of it, but there's kind of like a, a recognition that, hey, maybe there's something, this might make sense. On the other side, it seems like there are people who hear about this, in my experience, speaking with them, and they just think it's ridiculous. Like, they think it's absurd. I mean, what would, you know, brutish, short-living cavemen have, why would they have anything to teach us about health and nutrition and living good lives today? So it seems to really polarize people when they come into contact with it.
You know, I instinctively started calling the life I led an ancestral diet, for instance, from the nutritional standpoint. Physical culture is physical culture, but I instinctively started doing that probably around 2007, 2008, because the paleo terminology had already become a lightning rod for an almost zealot, like, oh, well, you eat like a caveman, you know. Oh, you eat the hunter-gatherer. No. I don't go out and kill animals and pick berries in my backyard and bring them upstairs. You know, I choose a style of eating that is more like the way my ancestors ate, not necessarily cave people either. But I instinctively started doing that because I realized that the word paleo polarized people. It was like a lightning rod for either people to say you're a zealot or a food Nazi or a caveman or whatever. And it's like, it's none of those things and you lose immediately. And I like the idea that they have an ancestral health symposium. I know they have plenty of paleo movements, but I like the idea because it's a word or a group of words that have a much broader meaning and it doesn't make people laugh. You know, oh, you want to eat like your ancestors. Wait, that's pretty logical. You know, it's like, how are you going to make fun of that one, you know?
I agree. I think ancestral health is a term that works a lot better. And in fact, I think it works better than we could also call it evolutionary health, right? But that's problematic in some ways,
yeah.
Because studies show that only 14% of Americans believe in straight up, you know, evolution by natural selection with no intervention by God. 14%. So to call something the evolutionary health model or evolutionary health, it seems like automatically you're going to turn off a whole bunch of people.
Well, but then the Christian community, the Christian community could jump on that and call it Jesus's diet. Well, this is how Jesus, you know, I mean, it's like there's a lot, but you know what? You're right. You got to be careful what you call it. Because you immediately alienate some people, energize other people. It's like, so you, and that's ridiculous. That's such nonsense. It shouldn't be that way. But that's why I feel like ancestral is harmless. You know, whoever your ancestors were, that's okay.
Yeah, and who doesn't love their ancestors, right?
Yeah.
Who doesn't love their great-grandfather?
And you know what? And it's also more accurate because we see polymorphisms that occurred after the paleo period in populations that settled in different regions of the world who had access to dairy while others didn't. So they produced lactase and others didn't, or had access to certain foods that, you know, like the Asian community, we keep looking at their diet, but guess what? We're not Asian. So their diet doesn't work for us the way it works for them. So ancestral also takes into account what you just said, that there's still evolution occurring, and this is an evolutionary style of eating as well when you talk about ancestral, because when you talk about your ancestors, you're talking about evolving from them. So I like ancestral. I really do.
I completely agree with you. I think that makes perfect sense.
Okay, so you will be in Atlanta, correct? When is the Ancestral Health Symposium? I've got to get my tuchus down there one way or the other. When is it?
It's the middle of August. I don't have the dates in front of me. I think it's maybe 11th. 12th, 13th, and 14th of August. It's right in the middle of August, that weekend.
Yeah, I had Dr. Lauren Cordain on the show back in 2006. I've had Boyd Eaton on the show. Boyd is a great guy, really, really nice man. But you know what? We talk about those two guys as being the first dominoes, but they're not. People like Bernard McFadden, Eugene Sandow. I mean, probably if someone did the digging, we could find the people in Greco-Roman times who were talking about, you know, eating beef made you stronger. Look at in the UK, they call those big guards that protect the queen and king beef eaters. There's a reason. It's not because they're drinking beef eater gin, for the record. It's because they ate a lot of beef to become big and strong. You know what I mean? So anyway, listen, I'm sorry. You were going to say something.
I said, that's funny. That's great.
All right. Listen, Dr. Staple, I want to thank you for taking time to come on the show, and hopefully we'll get to meet in Georgia in the near future.
That sounds great. I had a great time today. Thanks for inviting me on.
Take care. All right, so stay tuned. When we come back, we're going to stay within this context of this discussion a little bit, and we're going to talk about the farm-to-table movement from a sociological standpoint, because it really is paleo. When you talk about farm-to-table, you're talking about paleo or ancestral diets. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Everybody stand up, disco. Everybody put your hands up. Let's party. Everybody bounce with me. Some shit in the party. Everybody, it's hot. Disco Inferno, let's go. We're now rocking with
toothpaste is loaded with toxic chemicals. That's why I use Aura MD. Aura MD is a natural dental care product that is made from botanical oils that promotes healthy oral microbiome while destroying dangerous bacteria that lead to oral health problems. It does not contain fluoride, detergents, surfactants, or any other chemicals. Best of all, it leaves your breath smelling so good, people will comment about it. Right now, you can get a buy one, get one free of Aura MD by going to superhumanradio.com and clicking the Aura MD banner ad. I won't ever use anything else but Aura MD, and neither should you.
Iron Mag Labs is the leading supplement company offering the most hardcore pro-anabolic supplements. Visit IronMagLabs.com and check out our top-selling products. Asta RX, Halo Extreme, Sinustain RX, E-Control RX, Decadrol Max, Ultramale RX. Iron Mag Labs makes supplements that actually work. No hype, no BS, just real results. There's a reason you keep hearing about Iron Mag Labs. Come see what you're missing. Visit Iron Mag Labs at IronMagLabs.com for the most hardcore bodybuilding supplements.
I usually avoid protein bars because they're generally just candy in disguise. But that's all changed now. With Quest protein bars, we can enjoy dessert again without the guilt. With 20 grams of whey isolate protein, tons of prebiotic fiber, no sugar added, and only 2 to 6 grams of active carbohydrates per bar, Quest bars will keep you full and lean. I've never endorsed a protein bar before because I simply didn't trust them. That's all changed with the Quest bar. Not just because of what's in them, but more so for what's not. Go to superhumanradio.com today and click the Quest Protein Bar banner ad. Start enjoying dessert again.
Never before has an anti-estrogen been so powerful. The triazole formula is built on a potent, all-natural aromatase inhibitor called Pizole, which has been shown in clinical trial to be as effective as a leading prescription aromatase inhibitor. Pizole works in concert with the rest of the triazole formula to control estrogen while simultaneously boosting testosterone significantly. In fact, one of triazole's testers had a 120% increase in total testosterone and a 257% increase in free testosterone. Triazole is available at bodybuilding.com, NutriPlanet.com, where finer supplements are sold. For more information, check out GetDS.com.
AnabolicMinds.com is the premier website for credible information on building muscle, burning fat, supplementation, and more. With over 100,000 active registered members and over 2.5 million posts, it's one of the largest communities on the internet to get help and answers to your question. It's also the place that the official Superhuman Radio Forum is hosted. Visit AnabolicMinds.com today and get into the action. AnabolicMinds.com. Learn. Teach. Lead.
Get a free jug of BCAA Extended Performance. That's a $26 freebie when you buy Muscle Gauge Nutrition's Intense, the safest, most effective pre-workout alternative to DMAA. Intense is designed to quickly boost focused energy in a great-tasting formula free of aspartame or ACE-K. Only half the caffeine of top-selling concentrated pre-workout formulas on the market. Intense delivers unparalleled mental focus and energy to power your workouts. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Intense banner ad and use coupon code Code Super. That's S-U-P-E-R.
This is the Superhuman Channel, doing reps with the weight of the world.
Break down, baby. Break, 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 break down, baby.
Four. Break, break, break.
Yes, yes. Welcome back to Superhuman Radio. Okay, we're going to kind of stay in the same vein of the discussion as we're joined by Brian Boyce. How you doing, Brian?
Very good.
You recently published a paper, Trends in Farm-to-Table from a Sociological Perspective. And where was that published?
In the Journal of the Academy of Nutrition and Dietetics.
Now, something that will make my audience love you even more. You are a competitive natural bodybuilder, correct?
Yes, sir.
And a farmer.
Uh-huh.
Two of the greatest things in the world to be, and you're both of them.
So.
I know,
yeah.
I know. And so before we get into the paper, talk about yourself as a farmer. How long has farming been in your family?
About six generations.
Okay. And what type of farmer are you? Do you grow produce? Do you raise cattle? What do you do?
Oh, well, historically row cropping and cattle, but
I myself have got about 2 acres right now that we're doing in pesticide-free local produce for the farmers markets in this area. And it started out, it was going to be about 10 acres of produce, then it got down to 8, 5, now 2. It's just kind of an experiment, but you get appreciation for the volume of work. And, of course, as an athletic audience, they would appreciate the cardiovascular training and hoeing a couple acres by hand.
Hey, let's not forget the exercise, the farmer's walk, was called the farmer's walk for a reason. Because
absolutely.
You grabbed a heavy thing in each hand, and then you started walking. Before we get into the paper, you intrigued me for a second here. Growing produce without pesticides.
Yeah.
Do you take advantage of certain types of bug populations? Like, do you purposely make sure that there are plenty of praying mantis pods on your property, things like that?
There are a lot of crawdad holes, and on that property in particular, there are 3 bodies of water. There's a small pond, a large pond, and then some of a lake, so that there is a lot of insects there and fish. There's also a lot of frogs. Going forward, you know, I'd like to incorporate some chickens or something in there for natural pest production. Interesting enough, we found 2 honeybee hives, 2 trees full of honeybees.
Really?
On that 200-acre property, which is really pretty cool because the honeybee collapse system has been documented in a lot of detail here in recent years in North America.
So right.
To find 2 trees full of bees was really, really pretty cool.
That is cool. Yeah. Well, don't tell Monsanto about it because they'll kill them really fast. But anyway, okay, so let's get to the paper for a second. What made you write this paper, first of all? Was it because you are in farming and you want to see the farm-to-table movement continue to be promoted and prosper, or was it from a nutritional standpoint?
Well, a little bit of both. As a freelance journalist, I'm on contract with the journal, so I took it from a pretty objective standpoint. You know, I have a background in this and an interest in it, especially as a bodybuilder. I'm very interested in it, but we took it from a very straight up, you know, standpoint to question why is this occurring? It's pretty observable, especially in the metropolitan areas, say Chicago and the East Coast, and even Bloomington and north side of Indianapolis in this area, that you see a lot of upscale restaurants moving to the farm to table model. They're marketing local produce, they're marketing partnerships with local farmers. And the registered dietitian community and people in healthcare, you know, they see that, but the question is why? What's the sociological
reason? Do they like it? I don't believe the registered dietitian can appreciate the difference between a piece of grass-fed, grass-finished beef and the beef that they buy at Kroger's or Winn-Dixie.
Yeah, some do, some don't. Some do, some don't.
Okay, well, that's good if some do. That makes me have hope.
Oh, that's actually pretty. Before I started working with these guys about 5 years ago, I, like most people, didn't really know what a registered dietitian was. It's actually a pretty diverse group, and there are people in, say, SCAN, which is the sports and cardiovascular conditioning side of the field, and there's also a lot of people in healthcare, and actually a lot of the green energy, sustainable farming. There's a big drive within that community to push that forward. So. Yeah, there's been some evidence regarding CLA, the difference in
the types of fat.
Yeah,
and then also, fat. And then let's not forget, you know, omega-3s, grass-fed, grass-finished beef has an omega-3 to omega-6 ratio very similar to that of salmon.
Correct.
And people love, salmon is heart healthy, and well, registered dietitians and the medical community and the community at large needs to understand that a good piece of beef, from a cow that was raised naturally to eat what God meant, you know, or nature meant for it to eat, actually has healthy fats in it.
Well, I have 600 pounds of it in the freezer right now. I butchered one here in April.
Okay, well, I'll be up there right after the show.
Yeah, I tell you, it was an old cow, but it's been outstanding. The beef has been great. And just from another side of this, not just the health, but for $600, I butchered a 1,500-pound live weight cow. They got about 600 pounds of beef, so that's basically $1 a pound finished out, and, you know, round steaks, ribeyes.
Oh, my God. My mouth is watering right now. And you know something I learned, and we'll get off this subject in a second, but I think more and more people need to understand this, both from the farm side and the consumer or purchasing side. But you'll get a good piece of grass-fed beef and you'll get a bad piece of grass-fed beef. And you'll say, gee, what's the difference? And quite often it's the way the cow is finished. A lot of farmers don't let the cows finish long enough when they're pastured. They don't get that nice little cap of fat on either side of their ass.
Yeah.
When they have that nice cap of fat on either side of their ass, it's almost like my glass runneth over. That means that there's enough marbling of healthy fat in the meat in order for those two caps to fill up. And that's when they should be processing the cows. But too many of them process them too soon, and it's almost like eating venison. It's a little too dry, if you will, not enough fat. But more importantly, it almost has when there's not enough fat in the meat, it almost smells like wet dog. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah. Well, see, that's what I expected, frankly. And I was surprised, but I had a chuck roast last night, put it in the crock pot, and you know, it was marbled terrific, and it actually cut really well, so I could just cut the meat away from the fat when it was done. I gave that to the dogs and went about my day. But, you know, in bodybuilding, you measure to the gram.
Right.
Your protein, your carbohydrates, and your fat intakes. And finding the proper matrices for grass-fed beef was a little tough. I use CalorieKing.com. It's a free app, and to kind of gauge what the gram count's going to be when you weigh out your food. But you know, you can't replace beef. You know, fish is great, chicken's great, but beef has the iron, beef has the zinc, beef has the
higher levels of creatine.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah,
so
save your money on creatine.
So CalorieKing.com will give you the micro and macronutrient ratios of grass-fed beef.
You have to look under Laura's grass-fed beef. It's a brand name. It's one that you have to kind of find.
Not Laura's lean beef, which is organic commercial beef, right? Or is it the same person, but she has a different line of beef too?
Well, that's the same person. That's basically what I use. That's the closest thing I could find.
Okay.
You know,
okay.
When we do it, when I do my diet plan for the bodybuilding, I track it every day on an Excel spreadsheet.
Now, I gotta ask you something before we go into the break, and when we come out of the break, we're gonna talk specifically about what you learned about this movement.
Sure.
Do you drink raw unpasteurized milk?
I haven't, but I'm interested in that. Actually, there's a dairy just down the road that does everything grass-fed, hormone-free, the Swiss Connection. They actually market it to the Bloomington area, Chicago area, and they do sell raw unpasteurized milk, and I've been really interested. But as we'll talk about here in the sociological movement here, the cost, it's $6 or $7 a gallon.
Oh, it's more than that. It's $10 a gallon for me. I pay $10 a gallon. But and then every now and then I get a gallon of colostrum when there's a wet cow.
Yeah.
And I pay $30 for a gallon of first day colostrum, but it's worth every penny. And there's a guy, Josh Trentini, who's a natural bodybuilder and also a raw foodie. He eats all raw chicken, raw beef, and so on. And when he started using raw milk at the advice of Randy Roach, his bulking periods became phenomenal. And there's nothing more anabolic than raw unpasteurized milk and raw unpasteurized colostrum. But that's another discussion. Let's do this. I didn't mean to cut you off. We went a little long. Keep that thought. I'll let you say it on the other side of the break. And then we'll talk about your paper. We're talking with Brian Boyce. We're going to talk about the farm-to-table movement from a sociological perspective. You're listening to Superhuman Radio. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Natural USA is the best whey protein in the world. Not only is it from Amish grass-fed cows inside the United States, but it's the only grass-fed whey in the world that is not heat pasteurized. Don't be fooled by other grass-fed whey products that are low heat pasteurized. Only the patented Chill-Rite process leaves all the natural fractions of whey intact to boost your immune system while building more muscle. And Whey Natural USA is also the lowest price for non-heat pasteurized grass-fed whey protein in the world. Don't waste your time on products that only deliver 15 grams of protein per scoop. Choose the best with 25 grams of protein per scoop. Whey Natural USA. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Whey Natural USA banner ad today to see why anything less is wasting your money.
Could Altrian supplements be better than a Myers cocktail? Find out for yourself when you try Altrian C and Altrian ME. Using liposomal encapsulated technology, Altrian C's gel delivers up to 200% more vitamin C than pills or powders. The Altrian ME gel provides a high performance blend of B vitamins and minerals. Make your own Altrian cocktail 100% risk-free. Call 888 888-
437-6353 or order at feelgoodc.com. That's feelgoodc.com. Use coupon code FREE and ask about a free gift with every order you place. Order today at feelgoodc.com or 888-437-6353. Don't forget to mention coupon code FREE to receive your free gift.
Toothpaste is loaded with toxic chemicals. That's why I use AuraMD. AuraMD is a natural dental care product that is made from botanical oils that promotes healthy oral microbiome while destroying dangerous bacteria that lead to oral health problems. It does not contain fluoride, detergent, surfactants, or any other chemicals. Best of all, it leaves your breath smelling so good, people will comment about it. Right now, you can get a buy one, get one free of AuraMD by going to superhumanradio.com and clicking the AuraMD banner ad. I won't ever use anything else but AuraMD, and neither should you.
Orbit Nutrition carries over 1,000 of the hottest nutritional supplements, performance enhancers, and nutraceuticals on the planet. And now, Superhuman Radio listeners get an additional 5% off their everyday low prices by using the coupon code SHR5. That's SHR and the number 5. Choose from products like Quest Protein Bars, iForce Nutrition, Iron Mag Labs, and more. Check out Orbit's daily deals for special insane blowout prices. Log on to the Orbit Nutrition Forum and get feedback about the products you're shopping for and get an additional 5% off using the coupon code SHR5. Orbit Nutrition. Fast, reliable, competitive, international. Why shop anywhere else?
Way Natural USA is the best whey protein in the world. Not only is it from Amish grass-fed cows inside the United States, but it's the only grass-fed whey in the world that is not heat pasteurized. Don't be fooled by other grass-fed whey products that are low heat pasteurized. Only the patented Chill-Rite process leaves all the natural fractions of whey intact to boost your immune system while building more muscle. And Way Natural USA is also the lowest price for non-heat pasteurized grass-fed whey protein in the world. Don't waste your time on products that only deliver 15 grams of protein per scoop. Choose the best with 25 grams of protein per scoop. Way Natural USA. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Way Natural USA banner ad today to see why anything less is wasting your money.
I usually avoid protein bars because they're generally just candy in disguise. But that's all changed now. With Quest Protein Bars, we can enjoy dessert again without the guilt. With 20 grams of whey isolate protein, tons of prebiotic fiber, no sugar added, and only 2 to 6 grams of active carbohydrates per bar, Quest Bars will keep you full and lean. I've never endorsed a protein bar before because I simply didn't trust them. That's all changed with the Quest Bar. Not just because of what's in them, but more so for what's not. Go to superhumanradio.com today and click the Quest Protein Bar banner ad. Start enjoying dessert again.
Build muscle, burn fat. It's Superhuman Radio.
She take my money.
Work it, make it, do it.
Welcome back. We're talking with Brian Boyce. We're talking about trends in farm to table right now. Okay. I cut you off when we were going into the break, Brian. Did you want to say something to the point we were making before the break?
No. Go ahead.
Okay. All right, so let's talk about the paper. So yeah. Are the trends being driven from the restaurant side or from the consumer side?
Consumer side, without question.
That makes me feel good. You think there's any linkage between the ancestral health movement, the physical culture movement that seems to be becoming more popular today, and people's desire for locally sourced foods? And let's be clear about something. Locally sourced, to most people, means healthier practices in agriculture, non-genetically modified organic foods, pastured cows, you mainly raise pigs, pastured chickens that eat poop and worms and not soy all day long. So this term has become ubiquitous, locally sourced or farm to table. But it has a specific meaning, doesn't it?
Yeah, that's absolutely right. The public, which consider that America has 300 million adults in it, the public itself swirls these terms, local, sustainable, organic, and they mix them all and basically associate it with healthier, wealthier, wiser, happiness. They just mix it all together. And that's one of the challenges in trying to document and do empirical studies on what's going on here, because when you talk to any 10 people and you say, what's local food? You know, the United States Department of Agriculture, for instance, defines that as anything produced within 400 miles.
Right. So
you and I don't agree on that. I mean, no. 400 miles is ridiculous. So most people say 50 to 100. And again, that depends on where you live. If you live in a rural part of Indiana, you wouldn't say 50, because there's a farmer's market roughly in every community, or every other one at least.
Right.
So if you live in other areas, you might say 100. But getting some hardcore definitions have been an issue. But
well, but the interesting thing about all this is that the increments of where the food came from, in my mind, plays no role in whether I want to eat it, because I can get genetically modified Ready Roundup corn from 2 miles away. I don't want that. So the whole the whole locally sourced nomenclature is inappropriate. Granted, it's better than nothing, but it's inappropriate because locally sourced doesn't imply non-GMO. Locally sourced doesn't mean grass-fed, grass-finished beef.
Right.
Locally sourced could be conventional beef, and I don't want conventional beef. Don't we need a better name?
Yes, we do. And one of the things that we're clear to point out in the article, and it's semantics, but it's stuck in there, foods marketed as local. Marketed as local, not necessarily foods local, because as you just pointed out, you know, I can raise cows down here and shoot them up full of hormones and do whatever I want to do and then sell them locally. That's still local. There, one of the groups we talked to was the head chef at the Silver Diner, which is a large diner out on the East Coast. And he's gone to marketing the individual farmers, as a lot of these restaurants have.
So awesome.
The restaurant, it'll say, you know, eggs produced by such and such dairy or such and such farm, or, you know, milk from these dairies. And then they'll put the websites of the farms, because most of these, if a small farmer is marketing into a restaurant and has the capacity to feed a diner chain, which needs, say, 60,000 eggs a year, they're a big small farm. And they usually have websites and small family farm stores, and they invite people to come out and participate. The link between the farm to the table drive and restaurants is very similar to that at farmers markets. Any of the sustainable co-ops that you see, community-supported agriculture systems, and these farmers usually invite the public out to come and look at them. And that's where you start to get relationships with the local farmer.
Right.
That's a driver here, too. It's not just people see a health benefit, but they see a community benefit. They're keeping money local.
You know, and I've been talking about the decentralization of the food chain now for like 8 years.
Yeah.
You know, we need to decentralize the food. People need to start buying from their local farmers. I have a farmer, wonderful Mennonite family, Ridgeacre Farms, Jay King and his family, and I buy everything from them. You know, short of cleaning supplies, and you know, I mean, I buy my produce from them, I buy my eggs from them, I buy beef from them, I buy chickens from them, I get my turkey from them for Thanksgiving. You know, this is a wonderful phenomenon that actually benefits the buyer and the seller, because it keeps the money in the community instead of sending it to Purdue, which is, you know, who knows where, raising their chickens. It keeps the money in the community, so it's good for the community too to promote farm to table, isn't it?
Yes, absolutely. Well, actually, you mentioned, you know, Purdue, but frankly, it could be South America. I was shocked at the number of, especially in produce, canned and frozen produce comes from South America, and I wish when I wrote this, we just published this article here very recently. It's just out in this month's edition, but it was a couple of years ago, and I think I was at Walmart and I saw tomatoes marketed. They were from China.
Yeah.
And they had, you know, the label made in China, and I didn't have an iPhone at the time. It's been that long ago, but I thought, I wish I had a picture of this made in China.
Yeah. Why are we buying tomatoes from China when we could buy tomatoes right here in the United States? It just makes no sense.
You know, it has to be altered.
Yeah.
It has to be altered. There's no way that.
Well, what they do is they pick them green. They put them in nitrogen and other ambient. Environments, for lack of better terms, to keep them from ripening too soon, and then they let them ripen once again. And these tomatoes have no flavor. When you get them, they're like they just have no flavor. They're disgusting. Are any of the organizations now getting on board with this? You know, the National Restaurant Association drives a lot of what restaurants do in this country. Are they seeing that there's a benefit to this, and are they promoting this to their restaurants? Hey, you should go local, or are they part of the larger organizations out there that don't want to see this happen?
Oh, quite the opposite. I interviewed one of their spokespeople, and they were one of the groups that was clear this is consumer demand driving this, and so restaurants are in business to service their customers. Restaurants are going to do what the customers basically want to do. So you're seeing the customers drive this demand, but in the NRA's 2013 list, they have a chef survey and a bartender survey. Local food was again a top, you know, local, you know, seafood, local beef, local vegetable, basically everything local. In fact, on the bartender's list, even local spirits and local wine and beer.
That's cool.
So it's a driver, and it's a trend is what most of the people I've spoken to say. It's not a fad, and it's moving in that direction.
You know, I went to a restaurant here in Louisville called Eddie Merlot, and they had a locally sourced, grass-fed, grass-finished New York strip steak. And we went out with another couple, and I ordered the strip steak. It was $40. And the guy that I was with was like, that's ridiculous. And I said, why is it ridiculous? You can go to any of the five-star restaurants in Louisville, Kentucky, and get a 16-ounce New York strip for $32. So I'm paying $8 more because it's grass-fed, grass-finished. I don't look at it as I'm paying 40. I look at it as I'm paying 8 because if I went to some other shabby restaurant and they were going to serve me some conventionally grown piece of beef, they charged me $32 to $35 for a New York. You go to Ruth Chris, you pay $35 for a New York strip, a one-pound New York strip, and it's not grass-fed.
Well, one of the things that the chef from Silver Diner pointed out was you got to be careful what you're paying for. I mean, back to your example, if you're getting more nutrients in the more expensive cut of beef, then you're actually winning out. Because if you go eat a cheap piece of beef that doesn't have the same fat levels, that doesn't have the same vitamins and nutrients in it, you're still going to be hungry.
Interesting.
You may fill up your body, but your body doesn't understand, you know, this was one meal, therefore I'm done. It's, you know, your body says, okay, how many carbs did I get? How many fat grams? How much protein, you know, have I achieved my energy level for the day? And that's the old joke about going to eat at a buffet. You're hungry 3 hours later because
right.
you get a bunch of junk. So you do pay a little bit more sometimes for quality, but it ends up being less volume over the day, and that's why you end up getting smaller portions over the day. One of the problems with obesity and the epidemic in America is people are eating junk food. Junk food doesn't fill you up. It doesn't satisfy your body, and so you'll eat it all day long.
Right.
Whereas if you pay a little bit more money for the better stuff, you eat less of it, but you get more nutrients.
And I've had people say that to me. You know, they love the message of the show, but come on, be realistic. No one can afford to eat like this, and that's just not true.
It is. You know what?
And I love your analogy. Go find the farmer and buy a half a side of beef.
It's just not true. It's such a myth, and frankly, it's that people don't want to do it because the only advantage to the other way is efficiency. Buying local, using local food is a lot cheaper, frankly. Like in the case of the beef that we butchered here, ends up being $1 a pound for 600 pounds of beef. I mean, that's a year's worth of beef, and you've got all the steaks in the world you want. But more than that, when I started bodybuilding 2 years ago, as opposed to powerlifting and doing some of the strength sports, I went into it thinking that I was going to spend a lot more money on food. And it turned out to be just the opposite. I mean, because I was measuring out by the grams and I started eating, preparing my meals and vegetables and fruits and cutting out restaurants. See, when I'm prepping for a contest, I don't eat any restaurants, none. And I saved a ridiculous amount of money.
Yeah.
Eating healthier is actually much more cost efficient than
people think. And, you know, and then that's the intrinsic value of eating healthier. And then the extrinsic value is you don't spend as much money going to the doctor, being sick, you know, taking off from work. You're much more productive. I was thinking about this morning, you know, there's research out there that shows that obese individuals, they lose a portion of their cognitive abilities. So when you have a person who's obese working at a clerical job, they make more mistakes. Those mistakes cost money. And that can all be avoided. And it's very, very understandable, the linkage between obesity and cognitive acuity.
Oh, no, clearly. And I think even your listeners can think of a time when they've gone and splurged at a buffet or splurged at a restaurant. How productive are you after that? You know,
you're all weighted down. You feel like crap. You want to go to sleep. You want to go to sleep and sleep it off like an alcohol binge. You want to sleep it off.
Again, there's so much consensus on that topic. The USDA has been really pumping a lot of money into those programs. The USDA Know Your Farmer, Know Your Food initiative. You know, that included an $18 million value-added agricultural market development program that came out in 2009. It had another $8.6 million in educational funding to help producers learn more about managing the marketing. You know, a lot of these small family farmers that are in business, they're not very good marketers. They're just not. they don't do well at marketing their business, and some of that's because they're out there hoeing potatoes.
Right? You know? Yeah, they work from morning to from sun up to sundown. These, but you know what? The hardest working people in the world today. It's not those guys out fishing for stone crabs in Alaska. It's the farmers in the United States. They work from sunup to sundown. And especially if you're a dairy farmer, you got to milk twice a day. Christmas, you milk twice a day. New Year's, all those days that other people are taking off, the cows show up at the milking barn. They want to be milked. You can't go, we're going to take the weekend off. You come home with sick cows.
Oh, you have to respect dairy farmers. You're right.
Hardest working people in the world. Let's do this. Let's take a commercial break. When we come back, I want to talk a little bit about the USDA for a moment. We're talking with Brian Boyce. We're talking about the farm-to-table movement from a sociological standpoint. It is obviously being driven by people. That's a good thing. Is the USDA supporting it? It sounds like they are. So let's hear more about that when we come back. Stay tuned.
Summer's almost here. Are you ready to put on your bathing suit and hit the beach? Age Force can help. Try the Age Force Fat Burner Patch for 1 month absolutely free. The Advanced 7 Keto and T2 formula with sustained time-release delivery make this the most potent and effective fat loss supplement, period. Try it for 30 days absolutely free and see for yourself. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Age Force banner ad today. What do you have to lose other than body fat? Try the Age Force Fat Burner Patch today. Absolutely free. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the banner ad now. Get a free jug of BCAA Extended Performance. That's a $26 freebie when you buy Muscle Gauge Nutrition's Intense, the safest, most effective pre-workout alternative to DMAA. Intense is designed to quickly boost focused energy in a great-tasting formula free of aspartame or ACE-K. Only half the caffeine of top-selling concentrated pre-workout formulas on the market. Intense delivers unparalleled mental focus and energy to power your workouts. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Intense banner ad and use coupon code SUPER. That's SUPER.
There are a few products that I believe in the way I believe in CanSee eye drops. I've been using CanSee for 6 months now, and the changes in my vision are nothing short of amazing. My near vision has improved, and I can read small print from 8 inches. My overall vision is clearer, and the glare from oncoming headlights doesn't bother me any longer. Just 1 to 2 drops a day, and the results are visible. You can find CanSee eye drops at wisechoicemedicine.net or call 800-861-4930. That's 800-861-4936. WiseChoiceMedicine.net. CanSee Eye Drops. The name says it all.
Superhuman Radio has the smartest and most dedicated health and fitness listeners found anywhere in the world. If you're trying to tap this market of greater than 50 million health fitness consumers, you simply can't do better than advertising on Superhuman Radio. Our sponsors tell us Superhuman Radio outperforms other forms of advertising time and time again. If you're tired of wasting valuable advertising dollars and need a new way to build your client base, go to superhumanradio.com and click on the Advertise With Us link. It just may be the best thing you have ever done for your business.
Never before has an anti-estrogen been so powerful. The triazole formula is built on a potent, all-natural aromatase inhibitor called Pizol, which has been shown in clinical trial to be as effective as a leading prescription aromatase inhibitor. Pizol works in concert with the rest of the triazole formula to control estrogen while simultaneously boosting testosterone significantly. In fact, one of triazole's testers had a 120% increase in total testosterone and a 257% increase in free testosterone. Triazole is available at bodybuilding.com, NutriPlanet.com, or where finer supplements are sold. For more information, check out GetDS.com.
New from Rob Ragish, author of The Blueprint and SHR's own Blueprint Power Hour, comes The Blueprint Bulletin. Every month, Rob delivers the absolute latest and greatest information right to your inbox. Everything's on the table, including training, diet, supplementation, gray market products, and more. This is a fantastic way to stay one step ahead of your competition and use these secrets to up your game. Go to theblueprintbulletin.com or click the Blueprint Bulletin banner ad on superhumanradio.com to get your free introductory issue. Go to the blueprintbulletin.com today.
Jumping higher, lifting more. It's Superhuman Radio.
Welcome back. You ain't got no money, take your broke ass home. We're talking with Brian Boyce about the trend of farm to table that is the wonderful phenomenon that's occurring in the United States. More and more people are asking for locally sourced, healthy produce and beef and pork and chicken and everything else, eggs. I went to a restaurant this weekend, and they had a great breakfast menu, but they're not buying locally sourced eggs. I gave them the name of my farmer. My farmer, Jay King from Ridge Acres, he supplies a company here in town in Louisville called Creation Gardens, which then supplies a lot of the restaurants here in town with locally sourced foods. He supplies them with 600 eggs a day.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a big, big demand. And he does everything, beef, pork. I mean, this guy's whole family, these Mennonite people work so flipping hard. And so he supplies them with 600 eggs a day. So I told this woman, I said, you know, I love your restaurant, but you got to get with the program. These eggs, the yolks were pale and yellow. You know, I like those dark orange, high lecithin, fertilized chicken eggs laid in the presence of a rooster that I get from my farmer. I says, here's his name and number. You need to put these on the menu and explain to people that you're now serving locally sourced farm fresh eggs. It'll make a big difference to you. Keep in mind, she had sea salt on the table. She had stevia on the table. I said, your buyers will love this. They want farm fresh eggs.
Well, one of the groups I interviewed, they have 15 diners on the East Coast. They gambled $1 million. They were been in operation since the 80s, but when they made the shift to local, it was an extra $1 million a year in food costs, and it paid off. It worked for them. But that's how they marketed as, you know, we produce local food. And they advertise, of course, the farms that do that. But that group had to find a way to source 60,000 eggs a week.
Wow.
In just one of its locations.
Wow. Wow, so that's awesome. That's a lot of omelets right there.
It is. Well, so you have to find a lot of different partner farms.
Right.
You can't get it from one, obviously. And so that's what drives up the cost a little bit. But they made it up in volume. It's work. And that's when I talked to the chef, he said it's that's the big barrier. Frankly, I think everybody is on the same page with the desire for this. So the question is, what are the barriers? Why aren't people doing this? And a lot of it comes down to work and, you know,
yeah, but I don't buy that either. Now with CSAs, they have groups that'll deliver stuff right to your home. You know, with these buying clubs and now there's even in Louisville there's a guy now who opened up a store that's virtually a farmer's market all year long, because most of these farmer's markets are seasonal. It gets cold, they stop showing up. This guy has a store. He has a delivery service. So if you can't get all the way down to Market Street, which is where he's at in Louisville, they'll deliver to you. And the CSAs, I used to get a box of produce every week, and I would cook it and use it. I would get my eggs delivered, my milk and everything delivered every single week. I paid a little extra for it, but that's the convenience of not having to go all the way out to a farmer's market. And that's reasonable, isn't it?
That's very, if that's available there, we don't have that option up here. I think some of that's, there's not a lot of standardization, obviously. So yeah, if you're in an area where you can get delivered CSAs, we have some CSAs up in this area, but you have to go to the spot, and historically it's been a little dicey. It depends on your farmer. If you have a good farmer, it works out well. Of course, you're gambling a little bit with you know, how the season's going to go. Last year we had a historic drought,
right?
And that didn't go so hot, but there's definitely a lot of work on the farmer side, and I'd say that, you know, the people are lazy. You know, the public likes, you know, they like to have what they want when they want to have it, even though they know this is a better option for them.
What's going on with the inner cities, the more economically underserved? They actually, I read a study this morning, because we're getting ready to start addressing the whole why isn't the farm to table message reaching the urban communities,
well,
and why aren't the farmers markets showing up there?
There's a lot of there's a lot of moves toward that. That's one of the frustrating things. Just to kind of point out, you know, JAN, this journal, is a peer-reviewed journal. So every time I write one of these articles, it goes to a committee.
Right.
Usually professors, they mark it up and give you suggestions. This was one of the, this was an article that came back with some of the most. They were all positive, but it was a what if, you know, what about this? What about this? Because there's so many programs out there that people aren't using and they don't know about, and the general public's not aware of them. But the inner cities is a perfect example. The USDA's SNAP program, you know, what we used to call food stamps, the senior nutrition programs, all kinds of voucher programs. The USDA would love for every farmer's market to be hooked up with WIC and then be able to receive that.
See, and I'm glad you said this, because you want to know why? Because the reason that food stamps is under the USDA's bailiwick and not some other social program office in the government is because food stamps were originally created, for those of you who remember what throwback money is, in orange and blue. And they were designed to be taken by the farmers for produce. The whole reason for food stamps was because when people were moving to the cities to work for the factories and out of the country, the farmers couldn't get to the cities to buy, to sell their produce. So food stamps were created as a bridge mechanism to create incentive for the people in the city who were on social programs to spend their money with the farmers. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, that's taking it back a little ways, and much like the history of agricultural development over the course of the 20th century from the Industrial Revolution to today, you've just seen things get completely out of control. I think in the big picture it's going to come back to what you're talking about, where you are trying to hook up the individual inner city poor people with farmers who can come in to from the outside. But somewhere along the line, the mass production mentality, and it happened with government as well, instead of continuing.
Well, I say that somebody put the USDA's feet to the fire and say, look, that you could do this nation a great service by reinforcing the reason food stamps came about in the first place, and make sure that it's easy for farmers markets to take food stamps and WIC and so on and so forth, because that's what it was originally intended for. I mean, this is an amazing win-win situation for the farming community and for the people who end up getting healthy foods that don't cause disease.
Yeah, I don't think it's the USDA that's caused the blocker there. I'm not certainly.
No. I'm not saying that they created the blocker. What I'm saying is they need to put their foot down and go, look, these food stamps all need to, I that's fine, they're using them at the grocery store to buy, you know, the stuff they need, but they need to find their fair, they need to go back to the orange and blue. These have to be spent with the farmer.
Well, there's a lot of, not the whole other topic, but see, here in Indiana, there's been a big debate over whether stores can request identification from people on SNAP when they use those food stamps. There's a political philosophy involved in whether, you know, how much interference should be done on that. I agree with you.
I agree.
But, you know, over the years, there's a reason that they've gone from, you know, food stamps to an electronic debit card. You know, why don't they give people cash? Well, they don't trust them. You know, you have to make sure they don't go buy beer.
Right, right.
And so that's,
and cigarettes.
Yeah. So that's just the reality. But see, there's been such a huge, the USDA's tracked the number of farmers markets. It jumped from 1994, they had, 1,775 markets on the USDA registry. And in 2012, there were 7,864.
Wow.
Incredible jump. And there's a Terre Haute farmers market that we have over here. They don't accept food stamps yet, because it does require a lot of paperwork,
right?
And you do have to get set up into the registry. So most of these farmers markets are pretty informal, which is great. You know, it's an organic community of people who just show up there. There's not a bureaucracy or a for-profit. You know, there's no infrastructure. You know, no real market manager, so to speak. So getting somebody there to get all the paperwork done, I think, is a bit of a challenge. But it's a growing number. There are certainly a lot of those farmers markets that do offer that.
Yeah. And there's another phenomenon taking place that I just want to mention, because people need to be aware of this. And there's always hucksters out there. Anytime there's an emerging cottage industry, the hucksters see an opportunity. There are people showing up to farmers market that are selling the same produce, the same eggs, and other things that you can buy at Kroger's.
Well, if they get caught, they're going to get tossed. But yeah, they do try that.
I know, and you got to, I'm willing to buy. If I say to somebody, hey, is this organic? They go, no, I can't call it organic, but it's never been sprayed. I'm like, I'm good with that. I'll buy that. But I don't want to go to the farmer's market and pay a premium for something I could have bought at Kroger's cheaper. And you got to be careful. You do have to pay attention to that nowadays. You got to ask the right questions. Wouldn't you agree?
Yeah. Well, and a lot of that depends on which market you decide to patronize. Even as informal as some of those markets are, they do have a market master or some kind of organization. And the question is, how do you screen your vendors? See, around here, they do farm interviews. So the committee can go visit your farm and see what you're doing.
Yeah.
And they don't take anything from any further than, I think, 60 mile radius. And they actually get pretty persnickety about what is local and what is crafted, for instance, our local jam and strawberry preserves and such things. That's locally made, but they want to make sure that you're growing the strawberries on your farm,
right?
That you're producing the
not bringing them in from Florida.
Yeah, you can't go to the store, you can't go to Kroger's, buy the strawberries, make strawberry jam, and market as local.
Well, and I just stopped doing business with a farmer. There was a woman who shows up at a local place of worship in the parking lot all the time, and we started doing business with her to fill in during the week. And then I started seeing these boxes from Florida. I was like, well, where's this broccoli from? She says, Florida. And I said, yeah, but this isn't, that's not local. I mean, Florida's not local. She goes, but it's organic. I says, I don't care. It's not local. The whole idea of buying locally is, we've learned this from honey. There's intrinsic value in buying things that have absorbed the elements in the soil, in the area that you are spending your life in. And that's part of the value of local as well that isn't discussed. Let's do this. Let's take our last commercial break. And when we come back, we'll pick it up. We're talking with Brian Boyce. And we're going to talk about the sociological perspective here when we come back. Stay tuned. You're listening to Superhuman Radio.
Pop cold.
Dessert again with the new 100% natural line of high-protein, low-carb Quest protein bars. I love lemon cream pie and strawberry cheesecake, but you can choose from chocolate peanut butter, coconut cashew, or cinnamon roll as well. No matter which one you try, you'll feel like you're eating dessert. But this is no ordinary dessert. With 20 grams of high-quality whey protein isolate, 17 grams of prebiotic fiber, and sweetened with stevia, these bars will make you feel like you're cheating, but you're not. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Quest Protein Bar banner ad to learn more about these clean and delicious protein bars.
You train hard. You push the limits of your body every day, and sometimes pain pushes back. Now silence your pain with Phoenix Kinetocreme. Kinetocreme is made using a perfect blend of natural ingredients and reduces inflammation and shuts down pain with its very first use. Listen to what one user said about Phoenix Kinetocreme.
Training made me ache. My back, my shoulders, even my elbows. I rub Kinetocreme on my shoulders, and in minutes, I could feel the pain go away, not covered up by that freezing feeling like other creams. The pain was gone.
You can learn more about Kinetocreme by visiting PhoenixBioPerformance.com. Don't let pain slow you down. Rise above the ashes with Phoenix Kinetocreme. That's PhoenixBioPerformance.com. Summer's almost here. Are you ready to put on your bathing suit and hit the beach? Age Force can help. Try the Age Force Fat Burner Patch for 1 month absolutely free. The Advanced 7 Keto and T2 formula with sustained time release delivery make this the most potent and effective fat loss supplement, period. Try it for 30 days absolutely free and see for yourself. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Age Force banner ad today. What do you have to lose other than body fat? Try the Age Force Fat Burner Patch today. Absolutely free. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the banner ad now. Whey Natural USA is the best whey protein in the world. Not only is it from Amish grass-fed cows inside the United States, but it's the only grass-fed whey in the world that is not heat pasteurized. Don't be fooled by other grass-fed whey products that are low heat pasteurized. Only the patented Chill-Rite process leaves all the natural fractions of whey intact to boost your immune system while building more muscle. And Whey Natural USA is also the lowest price for non-heat pasteurized grass-fed whey protein in the world. Don't waste your time on products that only deliver 15 grams of protein per scoop. Choose the best with 25 grams of protein per scoop. Whey Natural USA. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Whey Natural USA banner ad today to see why anything less is wasting your money.
Thousands of Superhuman Radio listeners already know how well GLC 2000 works at repairing joints and cartilage, and it's the best price on the market, milligram for milligram. Now GLC Direct is offering a special that my listeners can take advantage of. Buy one, get one free of any GLC 2000 product. That's right, buy one of your favorite GLC 2000 products and get one free. Capsules or raw powder. Just mention Superhuman Radio and buy one, get one free today. Call 866-452-3473 or click the GLC banner ad on superhumanradio.com. Offer limited to one per household.
Never before has an anti-estrogen been so powerful. The triazole triazole formula is built on a potent, all-natural aromatase inhibitor called Pizole, which has been shown in clinical trial to be as effective as a leading prescription aromatase inhibitor. Pizole works in concert with the rest of the triazole formula to control estrogen while simultaneously boosting testosterone significantly. In fact, one of triazole's testers had a 120% increase in total testosterone and a 257% increase in free testosterone. Triazole is available at bodybuilding.com, NutriPlanet.com, or where finest supplements are sold. For more information, check out GetDS.com.
Listen strong. It's Superhuman Radio.
Welcome back. Tomorrow's Tuesday, but we will not have a Blueprint Power Hour on during the first hour tomorrow. We're going to be joined by a scientist who's going to talk about the hallmarks of aging. Very, very concise information about the things that are clear as indicative that your body is not aging well. And then, for the second hour, we'll be joined by Dr. Jared Scarron to talk about the autism update. So that's Tuesday. You'll want to tune in for that. Right now, we're talking with Brian Boyce, and we're talking about the farm-to-table phenomenon. It is clearly not a fad, and I'm happy about that. You know, people like you, Grant, the CEO of Monsanto, says that people like me who refuse to eat genetically modified foods, who want to buy farm-raised, locally sourced, healthy, nutritious foods, that I am an elitist. And from the social... Yeah, I know, right? I drive a 23-year-old Volvo, Brian. I am an elitist. I've never been to Aspen. You know, I mean, it's like I'm far from an elitist. You know what I mean?
I specifically asked about that, and not just a sociologist, Josie Johnson, who offered, you know, kind of headline that the foodie movement. I actually talked to her, but that was one of the things that, as I mentioned, this article was peer reviewed, just got smacked down hardcore. You know, when there was even just a hint that there's a snobbery in the food culture, because there's just not. There is an idea that people believe that they are able to make better choices. They're able to make healthier choices, and they're better choices, but it's not that you feel you're better than the person who's eating something else. You feel you're making better choices. There's a subtle difference there.
Is the desire for greater health and longevity at the root of consumers voting with their dollars and wanting locally sourced healthy foods?
Yeah, definitely. That and the idea of sense of community. But the idea of health and community are the two that are intertwined. And people, the public as a whole, when they do the surveys, the people in general don't know the difference between organic, local, sustainable. It all swirls together. But
right,
they associate that with healthier and better for the economy. They did a study in the Journal of Ecological Economics where they measured willingness to pay in terms of WTP, and found that there's a significant premium that people are willing to pay for apples was one of the things they used. And so it actually graduated with the distance.
Hmm.
The closer the apples were to the point that you were going to purchase them, the bigger the premium. The further the distance, the less of a premium. And then they compared that to wine, and it wasn't nearly as strong.
Wow, that's impressive.
Yeah, because wine is, you know, can be locally produced, but they weren't willing to pay the same kind of premium because there's no health difference between the, you know, wine is wine.
Right.
As far as the preservation goes. So that willingness to pay premium on the wine shows commitment to the community. You know, you want to support your local economy. But the bigger bang for your buck was on the local apples. And so, yeah, health is an issue there.
When you set out to write this paper, obviously you were coming from a completely objective position. Was there anything that really surprised you? Like, you know, I have a feeling about these things, but wow, I wasn't prepared for that.
I was a little surprised at the volume of opportunities and the numbers, you know, that were out there. The number of opportunities that I wasn't aware of. There's really no, if you're educated on the topic, there's no excuse not to participate. And you kind of touched on that when you were going into about the various CSA programs that are available, but not everybody's aware of that. You know, there probably are those options around, they're just not aware of them. So I was surprised, because I consider myself to be, you know, fairly well informed about this topic, but there's just so much out there. There's no reason people can't be more healthy in what they eat.
Do you think that there is going to be resistance from the big companies, you know, ConAgra, Syngenta, Monsanto? They're going, hey, you know what? We can't allow this decentralization happen. We can't have people going to their local farms and buying stuff. We have infrastructure in place here, and it depends on people to continue the buying trends that they've created over the past decade for us to survive, and we're going to stop this.
It's definitely right now. I don't think the movement is
big
large
enough
in gross dollars to really scare those guys. But you know, it's a lot like, why does McDonald's not serve healthy food? McDonald's does not serve healthy food because people don't buy healthy food at McDonald's.
Yeah,
you know,
right.
They offer salads.
You don't go to McDonald's for healthy food, right?
Yeah. You know, they have healthy options, but in large gross terms, they're not supporting that option. And so I think, you know, the industrial food complex would probably sell whatever they can sell to make as much money as they can. There's just not as much drive in that stuff. And but things have changed. You know, the kind of food that they're mass producing today is not the same as it was 50 years ago. So,
you know, what's interesting? We talked about this on Friday, on Casual Friday, but a grass-fed, a pastured cow dairy product, milk, is coming to Whole Foods. It's obviously pasteurized, so it has that negative against it, but it's still better than milk from corn and grain-fed cows. It's completely pasture-fed cows, grass-fed cows, that they'll be given alfalfa and alfalfa pellets in the absence of enough grass being available. But people, in order for Whole Foods to even think about doing this, there has to be, they must see the real milk. I mean, it's estimated there's 19 million people in this country today that buy grass-fed raw milk. That's a big population of people.
Well, there are, but you know, there's a shrinking number of dairies too, and if you got to kind of match those demands somehow, because there is a huge
demand. But the reason there's a shrinking number of dairies is because the dairy industry has been funneled, no pun intended, in through the big producers. So you know, small dairies are being put out of business every day because of unfair practices by local governments who have local jurisdiction, putting them out of business for assembling of cow share programs. I mean, it's terrible what's being done to dairy farmers today just to protect the supply chain of that crap pasteurized milk that you buy at the grocery store.
Yeah, we've got to find a way to help. You know, and that's what this is all about, you know, trying to identify these social movements to help, you know, foster it going along. Because there's demand for these products. The milk is another one. Like I said, there's a dairy just down the road from me, but his reach, you know, how many people can he reach?
But that's not, you see, this is the nice thing about it. Okay, so back in the old days, we had mobile telephones. You had one repeater in the center of a city, and it had a certain number of phones you could put on it. Then they went to cellular. They said, hey, if we have lots of little low-powered cell sites, we can have 60 conversations going on instead of one at one time. Well, that's what's going to happen to the dairies, right? So the more demand for grass-fed milk, raw, unpasteurized milk, then some farmer says, you know, let's buy some cows. We'll go ahead and start milking, too. And then next thing you know, you have two farmers supplying that community, then three, then five, then 12, then 70. And then all of a sudden, the entire community who wants to buy raw and pasteurized milk can buy it. It's the follow the money routine. If the more dollars that vote for raw milk, the more dairy farmers will sprout up.
Well, that's right. It's just a matter of getting the critical mass of dollars to vote for that option. And yeah, that's part of the struggle.
Well, we've done our part on this show. I have more people emailing me pictures of their first containers of raw milk. Hey, I finally found the farmer. I'm buying raw milk now. I know there are people that listen to this show, and I won't name who they are, but there's probably a half a dozen people that listen to this show that have had babies that, because their wives were unable to produce enough milk, they started using raw unpasteurized milk with their children, and and this is years later, their children have thrived. And I can't say anything about it because they would be taken up like being reckless with their children's lives if somebody found out about this.
Oh, yeah, that's all part of the evil mythology that annoys me when they do stuff like that. Actually, for fun, I really at some point want to get goats down there and milk some goats. But everybody,
I don't like goat milk. I just don't like the taste of it.
I think goats are more cost efficient than cows. if you're going to run anything with for milk, the goats are a lot more manageable. I haven't been around cows a long time. They're harder to work with, I think, and they certainly eat a lot more. The goats can live on a lot more varied landscape than the cows.
Yeah. I don't know. Goat milk just doesn't taste good to me. I've tried it before. I'll tell you something else I tried. I tried eating a bull recently. My farmer had a bull that had one giant testicle. And so they put it down at 12 months, and they processed it. And that bull made way too much testosterone because the meat didn't taste good at all.
Huh.
And I'll tell you something funny. I worked with a large animal vet when I was a kid. I worked on the racetrack. And one August in Saratoga, we gelded six horses in an afternoon. And I remember the smell of when the testicle falls out of the sack. Well, when I smelled that meat, it was the same smell. I could smell that testosterone in it. I couldn't eat the beef. And now I know why nobody processes bulls, because it doesn't taste good. They have that advantage right there.
Well, it makes your testosterone levels go up a little bit, I guess, when you eat that. So
I have other ways to raise my testosterone levels. Unlike you, I am not a natural bodybuilder, and I've turned to hormone replacement therapy. I'm 55 years old, and I'm on testosterone, so I don't need anything to raise it, that's for sure. Brian, I think this is great research that you did. It does reinforce the fact that this is not some fad, that this is a trend. Do you see it continuing to grow?
Yeah, and in fact, the restaurant owners I talk to are banking on that. They're banking on that going forward, coming full circle, and again, more farmers producing more local foods for them. And actually, there's some that are, some restaurants actually are producing what they call hyper local sourcing, and the restaurants are growing their own gardens.
Josh at Valare, a restaurant that we like to frequent here, he has for the past 3 years his own garden. He grows all the produce they use during the spring and summer months. He grows himself.
Yeah, there's more of that coming. You're seeing that more in the urban areas, in the larger scale areas. Again, there's a critical mass of dollars, and I think you do have to have a certain per capita income, or at least a median household income. I'm not sure what that number is, but it's going to be, you can't get those in the smaller, poorer areas or in the inner cities. It's definitely a upper middle class avenue at the moment, but down the road, hopefully that'll grow out a little bit more.
Brian, thanks so much for coming on Superhuman Radio.
All right. Thank you.
Take care.
Bye.
All right. So there you have it. I want to thank Brian Boyce for coming on the show today. Also, Dr. Hamilton Staple. He will be at the Ancestral Health Symposium of 2013 in Atlanta, Georgia. I'm going to try to be there, too. Elisa and I will be at the Olympia this year, by the way, at the Live On Labs booth. So look for us there. Okay. Thank you for listening today. We'll see you tomorrow.
Spit that out right now. This is the Superhuman Channel.